This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit coderedroofers.com.
I'm going to have a former congressman on and a current congressman on in the latter half of the show. Not that I can necessarily believe any of them either, but at least maybe we can get some answers to some questions. You know that we just figured out who the biggest donor in our elections is this election. Yeah. This is going to come as a big surprise to nobody. Well, maybe it'll come as a surprise to you, but it certainly doesn't to me. The biggest donor is a Republican trading firm owner and an investor in TikTok. He's the top donor in the U.S. election cycle, a guy by the name of Jeffrey Yass, a libertarian trading firm owner who started off as a professional poker player and is now a major investor in TikTok's Chinese owner, ByteDance. He's based out of Philly. He's donated more than $46 million to Republican causes so far in 2024 election cycle. Open Secrets, you know, tracks the donations, so they made that public. The funds have gone to support the former rivals of Donald Trump. So he's not a Trump supporter, less immediately they all say, oh, you see, MAGA people. No, no, not a MAGA person. He supported everybody but Donald Trump. And he supports groups that are, you know, for school choice and things of that nature, you know, causes. He was thrust into the spotlight this month after Donald Trump reversed his course on his preference for banning TikTok, saying that a ban would hurt some children and only strengthen Meta Platform's Facebook. He made the comments a couple of days after he met this guy at a gathering of the Conservative Club for Growth in Florida. So they only met for a few minutes. They didn't discuss TikTok, but they talked about education, or at least that's what we're being told. I can't even believe the guy I want to be president anymore. Donald Trump has been significantly outraged by President Joe Biden. We know that there's a lot of traditional Republican donors who are not paying. They don't want to pay his legal bills, is what they say. So Yass, who leads a Pennsylvania-based trading firm, Susquehanna International Group, and whose net worth Forbes puts at around $27 billion, to this day has not donated to Donald Trump. He gave a lot of money to Vivek Ramaswamy, Governor DeSantis, Tim Scott, and Chris Christie, Chris Christie was probably the biggest Trump critic out there. So he's not a Trump supporter, but he might become one now that Donald Trump has changed his mind about TikTok. Look, if he sells out, I'll be very, very upset. And I'm not going to ignore it. But where we are right now, what is it that Dan Bongino always says? I'm not sure that Republicans can fix the problems we have, but I am sure that Democrats created them. And you can't expect the people who created them to fix them. So we'll see. You know, I sit here and I listen to the machinations that go on. Politics is so dirty now. They're just awful. How do you serve with somebody for 4 years the way Mike Pence did as the vice president under Donald Trump and then say, no, I refuse to endorse him. I won't be endorsing him. I'm proud of our record. Well, it's not your record, Mike. It's Donald Trump's record. You were just along for the ride. So I just don't know. There's no loyalty. There's no decency. There's nothing. And the, you know, these are comments that people make that, you know, they just, it blows my mind. When people say, I support Donald Trump's policies, but I don't support the mayor. I don't like the guy. What does that mean? Is this a popularity contest? Are we trying to find out who's the, who's got the best personality? Or do we want someone who wakes up every day fighting for the country, fighting for this country, somebody who loves this country like no other leader in this nation has ever loved this country? I scratch my head. I just don't understand the political scene anymore. I used to be to consider myself somewhat of a competent expert. Now I look at what's going on and I think to myself, does anybody really think this is good, that these are good practices? The infighting, the money that's just the disease of money that's in politics right now. Can't run a campaign with less than $20 million. How could that possibly be good for this nation? What it gives us is candidates who can raise a lot of money. Doesn't mean they're going to be good candidates, right? And today, the Department of Justice has nothing better to do, right? They're either going after Donald Trump or they're going after Apple. You know, today they're suing Apple over the iPhone monopoly. This is an antitrust case. I should probably bring on my son. He's an expert in antitrust matters when he's not, you know, being a TMZ guy. But the Justice Department sued Apple, saying that the iPhone maker has a monopoly over the phone market that harmed consumers, developers, and rival companies. First and foremost, half of the people in my world don't have Apple phones. More than half. I would say the majority of my friends, including my husband and all of my relatives, don't have Apple products. They have Samsung, they have Galaxy, whatever. I don't even know what they have. They have other phones. But the Apple is an ecosystem of its own. Apple has computers, and Apple has Apple Pay, and Apple has Apple Watch, and Apple has the iPhone. And somehow, the government can think of nothing more important than going after them. Now, I don't support monopolies. You know, I don't think monopolies are a good idea, but there's not a phone monopoly. Now, do they have a right to create an ecosystem like that, an ecosystem like they have where, you know, your phone is tied to your watch, is tied to your laptop, is tied to your desktop? Why not? Why not? That is the concept behind Walmart, the concept behind brokerage houses. How much of the market can you dominate? How many products can you tie together and make it appealing? I don't own an Apple computer. I don't like them. I prefer Microsoft. I like Windows. I don't like the Apple operating system. So I don't have that's not true. I do have an Apple laptop. I don't use it. I got it for a specific project and it's sitting in a case. I don't use it. But I love my iPhone. And I love the way my iPhone takes pictures. And I love the way my iPhone offers me certain capabilities that I don't think other people get. Although now you can get a great photograph out of almost any of these phones. But this is the most important thing that the government has to do right now is break up Apple. I don't even know if it's anti-competitive, what they're doing. I don't own an iWatch or whatever they're called, an Apple Watch. I have a smartwatch. It's a Fitbit watch. And it does hook itself up to my iPhone. But I can't, you know, I can't talk on it and like the Apple Watch. But that's my choice. If I wanted one, I'd get one. I don't understand. I really don't. I don't understand how our government has time for this, but cannot figure out how to seal the border. Can't understand that we have young men, military-aged men, coming into this country and basically setting up camps all over. Today, I'm looking at a video of an underground tent city. Well, not underground, but under bridges and under highways. Tent city in New York of illegal immigrants. And I'm looking at the pictures. There's no women. There's no children. It's all men. And they're all fairly young. What the? Does this not strike fear in anybody's heart except mine? Apparently, there are a few of us out here. And I'm just going to keep pounding the table. Anyway, don't forget to download the app. Or if you don't want to download the app on your phone, you'll miss out on the contest. We have some good contests. We're giving away some tickets to Sunfest. But you can't participate if you don't go to the website, 850WFTL.com, or have the app. So why not get it? It's a good app. Well, we're not spying on you, okay? All right, let me take a break. I'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I remember that for a couple of years, all we did, well, during the Clinton years, all we did was, keep a running tally of people who were closely affiliated with Bill and Hillary that ended up dead. And almost inevitably, there were suicides from Vince Foster to everybody else. Well, it never ends, right? The executive director of the Bill and Hillary Clinton Airport in Arkansas. I didn't even know there was a Bill and Hillary Clinton Airport in Arkansas. But apparently, this is a weird story. Federal agents shot Brian Malinowski, the executive director of the Bill and Hillary Clinton National Airport, in the head during a firefight at his home in West Little Rock on Tuesday. The incident occurred when ATF agents attempted to serve a warrant at his residence early in the morning. Malinowski fired at the agents, leading them to return fire. Death by cop, suicide by police, I don't know. He got critical injuries, got prompt medical care at the scene before taken to a nearby hospital. Oh, apparently he's still alive. Oh, then that doesn't fit the usual scenario of the body count around the Clintons. So we'll just have to wait and see. Yesterday, my husband and I got into a bit of a discussion. I wouldn't say it was an argument, but sometimes I avoid the most outrageously terrible news and I don't catch up on it until some point down the road. And so yesterday I saw this article about a woman who received life without parole for the death of her infant child. And I mentioned it to my husband and he said, "That is the most horrific story. Did you read the story? Do you know what she did?" And I said, "No, to be honest, I don't. I know that she was the cause of her baby's death." And he said, "She left the baby in a playpen for 10 days while she went to Puerto Rico and cavorted on a beach." And I said, and this is where a little sort of argument happened, I said, "No way. But way. That is actually what happened." And maybe it's just me, But on what planet does a human being do that? I mean, the judge, I watched the sentencing yesterday, because you would think this woman was, being mishandled, or there was no justice served the way she behaved in the courtroom. But I'm listening to what the judge said, and then I'm really thinking about it, and I had nightmares, of course. The worst part about these stories is they give me nightmares. And she literally stuck her 16-month-old baby in a playpen, a pack-and-play. That's not even a full-size playpen. It's like your traveling playpen. Put the baby in there with a couple of bottles of milk. And then left, locked the door, took her suitcase, and went to Puerto Rico with some guy. And then comes back 10 days later. And, of course, the baby is dead. But she dresses the baby and dials 911 and says, oh, there's something wrong with my baby. Really? Okay. So then I read what I listened to what the judge said. First and foremost, if you've ever had a child, they're so clingy at 16 months. Like, separation anxiety is a big deal to any infant between 1 year and like 2.5. Like, you leave the room and they start screaming and crying. Because for the first time, they're not sure if you're coming back. Now, this baby really wasn't sure because her mother had left her for 2 days before this. So she leaves the house, and the judge was, asking the perpetrator and the people that were there to think about what that child went through. She was lying in her own filth. She had eaten her own poop. But that's not as horrible to me as what did she think? What did her little mind think for that whole period of time that she'd been abandoned there like that? And then they said that the neighbors were saying that she was crying. What kind of human being listens to a baby crying for days and doesn't do anything? If my neighbor, my elderly neighbor, doesn't answer the door when I knock on it, I call the police for a wellness check. I don't know. She's very hard of hearing, so most of the time she just didn't hear the door knock. But I could never live with myself. If, God forbid, she had fallen in there and I didn't call for a wellness check and they were able to, to save her. My father had fallen in Virginia, and lay there for 22 hours before his wife had come back from a trip that she had taken. I live in constant fear now because of that. And I'm thinking, who walks away from a baby for 10 days and then posts pictures of herself on the beach? These are terrible people. These are people that really, they don't deserve to live. I'm sorry. If that's not punishable by death, I don't know what kind of crime is. It's just so horrific. And I'm looking at all these horrific crimes. The girl who bashed the other girl's head against the concrete, now that girl's in a coma forever. What is going on here? We have absolutely no compassion. We have a whole generation coming up that doesn't feel any empathy or compassion for human beings. It's shocking. It just hurts my heart. I can only imagine what it does to our creator, whatever you want to call your creator. I call him God. You got to be looking and thinking, I better get back there soon. Anyway, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, I'll be talking with Carlos Curbelo, former congressman. And I want to know, once you've taken a few steps away from the mess up there in Washington, what do you think? And do you want to go back? Anyway, stay right where you are. I'll be right back. All right. Well, we're waiting for former Congressman Carlos Curbelo to call in. I'm not sure what time. I think I might have said 3:33 because we're always running a little bit late. But I will, if he calls in, we will put him right on. I got a lot of questions I want to ask. It's gotten to the point now where I'm minding what's happening in a lot of other countries because I think it's directly affecting what's happening in my own country. And that's always been true, but never more than right now. There are times when a lot of people will say to me, Joyce, what can I do? And I always say, you have to contact your congressman. And they go, they don't listen to me and they don't care. And nobody even answers the phone. And that's not true. And I'm going to prove that with both of the congressmen, if former Congressman Curbelo calls in, and definitely with Congressman Waltz, their offices are required to keep a tally of phone calls. So if you call in because you have an issue or because you want them to pay attention to a problem, that's going to be noted. And if there's enough notations, there's going to be movement. And that's why, when people say to me, what can I do? Well, that's the first thing you can do is be an active participant in your own country and in the way that we're governed. These are representatives. We lose sight of that. We call them congressmen and we give them a fancy lapel pin and we upgrade them to first class when they're on an airplane. But we forget their official title is representative because that's what they are. They represent a district. And that district is comprised of the people who live in it. So trust me, I'm all about harassing them, calling them, making sure that I register approval and disapproval all the time. And when you do that, you are participating. It's like, I felt so bad for the woman here in Broward County who said she was working at the polls on Tuesday. And she was so upset that, it was only a Republican primary and it was only one race. And she was upset that people didn't show up. For me, anytime I get to fill in a bubble is a duty. It's a responsibility. I take it seriously. And if you don't, well, then one day you'll lose that. It's freedom is a hair breadth away from obsolescence. And you don't want to be the one explaining to your kids or your grandkids how I didn't think it was important. He already had the nomination, so I didn't vote. We just don't know, how our participation changes things. But it does. It really does. Anyway, let me keep talking about this Department of Justice going after Apple. Apple shares, of course, fell immediately today. I was watching. I actually have been an investor in Apple in the past. I'm not right now. But if they break up Apple under the Sherman Act, which is the legislation that would allow them to do this antitrust move, I'm trying to think of the last time that they did this. I think it must have been Bell, the telephone system. The Justice Department said in a release that to keep consumers buying iPhones, Apple moved to block cross-platform messaging apps, limited third-party wallet and smartwatch compatibility, and disrupted non-app store programs and cloud streaming services. That's not true in my case. I can only speak about what my experience has been, but my iPhone allows me to message other people who don't have iPhones. It allows me to, my smartwatch is compatible with my iPhone. They just create problems where there are no problems and ignore problems where there are problems. And that's what's so frustrating. And I'm sure I'm not the only one frustrated. But if U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland can't think of anything that requires his action more than a lawsuit against Apple, I give up. And I know people are probably sitting there going, but Joyce, you don't want Apple to have a monopoly. I don't care. It's a great product. It would not be used by so many people, including me, if it wasn't a great product. If I thought I could do better, I would. But I enjoy my iPhone. That's the truth. So this is a lawsuit that follows years of investigations into Apple's business practices. And there were two cases before this against Apple. One was over the price of ebooks, and another was that they said that they colluded with other tech companies to depress salaries. This anti-competitive behavior, they said in the complaint, is designed to maintain Apple's monopoly power while extracting as much revenue as possible. And then, of course, they quoted Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple. When Apple users have asked them to improve the messaging between Apple and Android phones, they say, well, we've done the best that we can and we're not going to do any more. I get it. But I don't know what they're talking about. I have to message my husband every day, and he has an Android. I don't have a problem. Just, you know, if you have a problem, then buy an iPhone. That's all I'm going to say. I just got a notification from Apple that I'm part of some program where it's actually time I could now turn in my iPhone and get a newer model. Okay. You know, they've made a customer for life out of me. I have owned an iPhone since the first iPhone came out. And this is probably my fifth or sixth iPhone. All right. We have former Congressman Carlos Curbelo is on, former Congressman for the 26th District here in Florida. I got a little nervous. I said, what happened to the congressman? So I'm glad you were able to call in. How goes it?
How are you, my friend? It's good to be with you. It's been a bit.
It has been a bit, and it is good. And you got to be watching what's going on in Washington and shaking your head. Do you miss it, or are you glad you're not there now?
listen, I miss making a contribution, but I certainly don't miss the place. It's become a hostile work environment. And unfortunately, the incompetence was always a factor, but now it seems to rule the day there. So
really
hoping
does.
for better days ahead for that city.
Yeah, that would be nice. I have to ask you, because of course you have a heritage, Cuban heritage. Have you been watching what's going on in Cuba? I mean, it's a nightmare. Haiti, well, Cuba, these countries are falling apart.
Yeah, as if we needed further reminders that socialism and communism and central government control really doesn't work. People in Cuba literally cannot get their hands on milk for their babies. And all the Cuban regime can come up with is blaming the United States for having a sanctions policy. Mind you, Cuba's free to trade with every single other country in the world.
Right.
Yet they can't manage to provide basic needs, food, medicine, for their population. So they can look in the mirror if they want to wonder what's wrong with their country. And the good news is, Joyce, that most Cubans on the island understand the truth. That's why they're out there protesting against the government, not protesting against the United States. We can only hope that the situation there gets better, because, of course, the number of Cubans that have come to the United States is just extraordinary. It makes the Mariel boat lift look like a non-event. And
right.
the rafter crisis after that in the 90s, I mean, they pale in comparison to what's happened here over the last few years under this administration.
And everywhere. I mean, look at our southern border. This is an outrage that we have a porous border. It's not even porous. It's like wide open. And we've got an administration that keeps telling us there's no there there. Just don't look. And maybe
well,
it'll get
Joyce,
better.
Listen, you're right. And you know my history. I always tried to build consensus around immigration policy. I thought we could find a middle ground. But this administration has made it impossible because you're right. It's not a porous border. It's just an open border. They took the position from day one that anyone who came to the country illegally had some fundamental right to be processed into the country. And this was a policy that existed for a long time. And of course, you know, there were exceptions among those coming to the country illegally. If someone was trying to kill you, if the government was persecuting you in your country, if you were a known opposition leader whose life was at risk, of course we would process you into the country and let you have a hearing because, you know, you might get killed otherwise. Right. Now, that was supposed to be the exception, not the rule. Right. But the Biden administration went ahead and said, anyone who comes here claiming for asylum will have a right to a hearing and we'll process them into the country. And while they're here, they will receive public benefits. I mean, that's just an open invitation for anyone in the world who's unhappy with their situation in their country to show up here. And, you know, I'm a Christian. I wish we could do something for every single person in the world, but it's just not realistic policy, right? I mean,
no.
We need to have an orderly, regular immigration system, and people who want to come here have to do it legally. And people who believe that aren't anti-immigrant, aren't racist. We just have common sense, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the point, that there is no common sense in Washington anymore. And it forces governors like Governor Abbott in Texas, Governor DeSantis here, to have to protect the people in their states. And thank goodness the Supreme Court is kind of on the side of these governors. But this administration just keeps fighting. And what a total waste of energy and time. Now we're fighting Apple, you know, in antitrust suits. I mean, that's the best.
I get the idea that immigration is the responsibility of the federal government. But what if year after year after year, the federal government fails at upholding its basic duties, right, which is to have a secure border, keep our country safe? I mean, at some point, people have to be allowed to take matters into their own hands and try to make the situation better. And I think that's what the court has done here. We'll see. I mean, this case isn't yet fully resolved.
No.
But for the time being, the Supreme Court has said, well, you know, seems like this state has no other option, Texas, but to try to improve the situation because they're at the front lines, right?
Yeah.
And ironically, I mean, this administration has turned New York and Illinois and a bunch of other states into border states as well, because now they understand how disruptive it is, how difficult it is to conduct your state's affairs when every day you're getting thousands of new people who, I mean, really have, I don't know, but most of them, of course, are not trying to harm anyone, but some are, and the rest need to be cared for one way or another.
Exactly. Well, I've missed you. We'll have to make sure we get you back in on a regular rotation because you've always been the kind of sensible one, which is probably why you didn't last because you got to be crazy now, extreme one way or the other to survive in that environment. But Carlos Curbelo, thank you so much for coming on and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, my friend.
All right. A good guy. And we definitely have seen the best and the worst go through Washington. Quick break. And when I come back, Congressman Michael Waltz will be with me. And then, of course, if you stick around for that segment, we'll talk. I'll be right back. As I promised, I have Colonel Mike Waltz. See, I think it's more of an honor to refer to him by his rank, retired colonel, than as congressman or representative, because I think you probably are embarrassed to be a congressman in this particular Congress. But, you know, you should never be embarrassed about being the first Green Beret to serve in Congress. How are you, sir?
Hey, always good to be with you, Joyce. And I will say it is always an honor to be a part of this republic, to represent, you know, 800,000 Americans. But, yeah, the behavior of this Congress has been pretty embarrassing many times.
It's just horrible. I mean, I looked at that State of the, you know, Union address, and It boggles my mind that you would actually have the kinds of behavior coming out of those Democrats that I saw there, that constant up and down for nothing. What are you cheering? The country's a mess. I'm just...
Yeah, well, they were cheering. They were cheering the, you know, the favorite four-letter word of the progressives, which are free. As Biden was announcing, free this, free that, more government programs, more spending for all of their social goodies.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most embarrassing moment actually was the arrest of a Gold Star family. It was like,
right.
The Gold Star father, who was so incensed that Biden to this day hasn't said out loud his son's name, lost at Abbey Gate in the shameful withdrawal from Afghanistan, and then to charge the man. Fortunately, we worked with the Speaker's office, Brian Mass, myself, and other members to get those charges dropped. But to me, that was just disgraceful.
It is. And there's so many disgraceful things that are going on that I feel terrible for people of you know, who have a moral compass like you do. What is going on in our military? I mean, I see the numbers. You can't get recruits to come in. Still have all these people who were basically sent home because they wouldn't have an injection that we now know didn't work. How are we remedying this?
Well, and look, to that last point on the vaccine, we're fighting like hell to get them reinstated, those that want to come back. But the Pentagon was on the verge of kicking out another 20,000.
Right.
Had House Republicans not stepped in, put our foot down with Joe Biden and said, you won't get a dollar for anything unless you protect these people. It's a personal health decision. Once it was clear it didn't stop the spread, number one. And then number two, this is on top of the Pentagon being down 45,000 recruits, that it missed its number. That's whole divisions that it's now missing as we face threats the likes of which I haven't seen in my lifetime. And I, as you know, I served 27 years as a Green Beret.
Yeah.
And so we have the bottom line, Joyce, is we have a Pentagon leadership, not our soldiers that are amazing, our Pentagon leadership that is more worried about renaming bases and putting Chinese-made solar panels everywhere and electric tanks because they want an army to be carbon neutral. I want it to be the most lethal. And I want our enemies to respect and fear it. But that's not the leadership we have in this White House that and his appointees in the Pentagon. That's not their focus.
No. And I saw the hearing where you had McKenzie and General Milley there. I mean, these people really, they don't seem to have learned anything from the disastrous withdrawal. They don't even admit that it was wrong.
That's right, and that's what's such a slap in the face to the 13 Gold Star families. It's one thing to say we made mistakes and your son is dead because of them. And I pointed out there's a big difference between accepting responsibility and then having accountability. Not only has no one been fired or even laterally transferred for that matter, Biden's promoting the people that were in charge. He's nominated several of them to be ambassadors to other countries that were in the State Department and his White House. That's what's such a slap in the face, because these families know it's going to happen again if, God forbid, we have Biden in office another 5 years with this team of clowns around him. But at least on this hearing, Joyce, both Milley and McKenzie were candid. They didn't pull any punches. And they said, when we briefed President Trump, President Trump wanted everybody out. He wanted everybody out, U.S. citizens, our embassy, our allies, the civilians that were there before the military got out. Biden said, no, no, take the military out. All of those people will be fine even if the government falls to the Taliban. We can get along in kumbaya with the Taliban. That's what kind of idiocy and incompetence we have in charge right now. And then once they figured out that that was idiotic, then the military was thrown into the chaos and in the mess to try to make the best of it. And what it was a result of that, they had to outsource security to the Taliban, to the terrorists, to deal with the other terrorists. And we have 13 new Gold Star families because of it.
Yeah,
and to this day, zero accountability for that.
Yeah. And what makes it even more insane is we're doing things like insisting that Israel not defend itself and talking about floating, you know, ports and all of this stuff.
Yep.
I just don't understand how we don't hold the Pentagon's feet to the fire, how we could have a defense secretary who disappeared for 2 weeks. And, you know, and he said, well, I'm sorry, but I won't do it again. Oh.
Yeah, my teenage daughter knows you got to tell your boss when you're not going to come to work, even if you're sick.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Much less the guy with the nuclear codes who didn't think it was important to tell the president of the United States. And then a president who was in the Virgin Islands. The defense secretary's deputy was in Puerto Rico on the beach drinking mojito. She didn't know either. Wow. So we literally didn't have anybody in charge of the most powerful military of the world that could destroy the world. And by the way, if North Korea or Iran or anybody else launches a nuke or a ballistic missile, you got about 15 minutes to respond.
Mm.
Not to make everybody want to drink whenever I come on your show, but this is what we're fighting against here, and this is why you've got to have more veterans and people know what questions to ask and where to probe, where to poke, and where to defund to do what we can until November.
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, I'm so grateful that you're there. Keep up the good work, and, you know, we'll have to talk again soon. I have a lot of questions I didn't get to ask you, but we will talk soon. Thank you, Colonel Waltz. I appreciate your time.
Happy to, Joyce. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. And listen, I'm going to call these guys the Sergeant Mass, Colonel Waltz, because being a congressman, apparently any dope can be a congressman, but you have to earn the title colonel or sergeant. That's not just assigned to you. And if AOC can be a congressman, then I rest my case. You know, she just seems to be getting dumber by the day, as my colleague in the morning said this morning, had me hysterical, although it's not funny. So I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, I'll be back tomorrow at 3, if it be his will and he delays his coming. Eric Erickson coming up next, Joe Pags, Lars Larson, and then, of course, the morning crew will be back first thing in the morning to wrap up this week. In the meantime, may God bless you. May God bless Israel. And may God bless the United States of America. I will see you all tomorrow at 3. Stay safe.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.